Thank you, Sharon. This is Saturday with Claire Byrne. You're very welcome to the programme. Joining us in the studio today, we have Martin Hayden, Chairman of the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party and TD for Kildare South, Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Fingal and spokesperson on Foreign Affairs and Trade, Daniel McConnell, Irish Examiner, political editor is here, Mary Minahan, Irish Times political staff, also joining us today, and we're hoping that Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD, here he is walking in through the door. Take a seat there, Michael. Independent TD for Roscommon Galway is with us too. And on the phone with Francie Molloy, Sinn Féin MP for Upper Ban. Dara, I'm going to start with you because your party leader, Micheál Martin, said that Sinn Féin MPs, elected MPs, should now take their seats in Westminster. Tell us why.
Well, basically, you're looking at a situation now in Britain where you have a UK election has thrown up a hung parliament, as we know. Worse than that, I think the prospect as well is you've a hard Tory government that's going to be propped up by the Democratic Unionist Party. If Sinn Féin won seven MPs, won seven seats, should I say, of seven MPs, every vote that's actually lost by or won by the Conservative DUP government, if that's what happens, by seven votes or less, is effectively being enabled by Sinn Féin. And the reality of it is, I know it's not an easy step for them to take, and I don't think that's not what Micheál suggested either, but you have a situation now in the North where you have no assembly, you have constant paralysis there because it seems to suit Sinn Féin and the DUP indeed not to have an assembly. They'll have no say in Westminster either. So this is just the reality of the situation post the election in Britain.
Okay, but Sinn Féin MPs are elected and have always been elected to Westminster on their stance, yeah, that do not take their seat.
No, I know that, and we all know that. But I think the reality in the North now, that if you take the SDLP, for the first time since 1964, there are no nationalist seats, there's no nationalist voice in Westminster. Now, I don't like the fact that Westminster has effectively jurisdiction over the North, but that's the way it is. But there's no voice there whatsoever. So
you want Francie, who's listening to all of this,
I didn't know Francie was listening, but good, yeah.
To hold his nose and take the oath of allegiance.
Well, you see, it's not about taking the oath of allegiance.
That's what he'll have to do.
Well, really, it's what he might have to do, but really what it's about is about Sinn Féin representing the people who elect them, because they don't do it in the Assembly, and they seem to just consistently want election after election. When with the change in Fine Gael leadership, they called for an election, because Sinn Féin have nothing to offer anyone bar electoral politics. They don't like making decisions. They don't like to be in areas of responsibility. And they've proven that under their new leader in the North. They've proven it again by not representing the people who elected them in the North. And that's a decision they'll have to make, but we're entitled to our opinion on it.
Okay, well, Francie, you're very welcome to the programme. What do you say to all of that? And by the way, I should have said Mid-Ulster is your constituency. What do you say to all of that, that now is the time to change your stance?
Well, first of all, it's not the time, and I don't see a time whenever that would actually happen. The people have just voted, and they have rejected attendance at Westminster. Three SDLP MPs who have attended Westminster for a number of years all lost their seats, and Sinn Féin vote has risen right across the board. We have went forward to the election and looking for a mandate on the basis of us not taking our seats, on a substantive basis.
That was then, right, this is now, right, though, Francie. Is that not the case, though, that when you went into this election campaign, that nobody could have foretold what was going to happen and how this was all going to shake out, and that the DUP would be the kingmakers here?
Well, I think lots of people actually had predicted that we would have hung Parliament. So we were going forward on that particular basis. But it's not right to say that Sinn Féin don't represent, because we are probably as often in Westminster in the lobby and talking to all the political parties,
collecting expenses,
in providing a constituency service, as any other political party is.
Well, do you reject the expenses that you take then from the British taxpayer, Francie? Will you do that as well?
We take our expenses in the same way you take them or any other elected representative.
You don't represent people in the Parliament.
In order to provide a constituency service for the people who elected us, who give us that mandate, and they give us that mandate on a very clear line that we weren't taking our seats. The SDLP this time made it very clear that this issue was about abstentionism. The people rejected that.
Well,
that
I don't think so, Francie. I think, to be fair, what your campaign was about dominating the community and not about representing it, because the SDLP's track record over the last 40 years has been far more positive in relation to the North than Sinn Féin has. And if you look at the leaders they have and what they have done to bring peace not just to the North but to the island of Ireland, and representing the people with distinction in Westminster, is in sharp contrast to what you and your colleagues do.
I think if you look at the record of any MP attending Westminster, it's very hard to point to one success that they've had. I think the
John
idea,
Hume, Seamus Mallon.
I think if you look at what the ACT delivered for the constituency, and if you're speaking on behalf of the SDLP, that's one line. But I would have thought that you actually would speak on behalf of your own party. That you speak on behalf of your own party, and we deal with the issues that we have here. We have a new mandate here for negotiations, and our people will be negotiating to get the Assembly up and running, provided that Assembly is based on respect, and we expect the Irish government
to
guarantee
the Assembly.
That as
Dara,
well.
Just on this discussion, on Poblacht have tweeted saying, why doesn't Micheál Martin stand candidates in the north of Ireland and then the Fianna Fáil party can take their seats if they win?
Well, absolutely. Look, what we're doing at the moment, and we've said that, is we're assessing our next step. We're heavily engaged in the North on a daily basis. We're in the middle of producing a white paper and completing a white paper on what unification would look like. And we will assess as a party what our next step. We have members in the North of Ireland. We engage on a daily basis on issues in the North. My party leader and I visit the North regularly.
And you'll be happy enough to take an oath of allegiance to the British
Francis,
Queen.
What we're talking about is if you look at the next step.
Well, answer that question, Dara.
Sorry, we're talking about this.
Would you be prepared to take the oath of allegiance to the British Queen and claim to be Republican?
The thing is, Francie, what this is an absolute diversion from the election that you've just been elected.
Yes.
You stood for a Westminster election.
Yes.
Okay? You have a situation now where the DUP hold the whip hand to this Tory government, where you've no assembly, you've no voice in the North coming into Brexit negotiations. So would Sinn Féin not even look at what could be done to make sure that the nationalist and Republican population in the North of Ireland, that their views is absolutely represented?
I think if you look at the record of our MEPs in Europe, they have done more in a short time in Europe
the reality of a political situation
forward the issue about Irish unity.
Well, I know Martina Anderson. I've met her. I've spoken with her in Derry. I've shared platforms with her there, and she's someone I hold in regard. I've no issue with that. What I'm talking about, a political reality now, is that 2 days hence, 7 Sinn Féin MEPs have been elected. You've a hung parliament in the North. You're going to have a Tory government that is intent, that didn't even care about the North of Ireland. Let's be honest about it. The only time the British media have started talking about the North in the last few weeks is now. People didn't even know who the DUP were.
But you're expecting Francie and his colleagues to take the oath of allegiance, and you won't tell us whether you or your colleagues would do the same thing.
Claire, this is the reality we're dealing with now, is that they were elected last Thursday. They could take their seats in the morning and have an impact if they wanted to. They could hold their nose and take their seats, but they won't. And this has been a consistent approach
by
Sinn Féin.
But you still won't tell me whether you would do the same if you were in that position.
We did not run for election. My party is going to assess
what
we want.
That's the whole point. It's very easy to shout.
It's actually not the whole point, by the way. The whole point is that Sinn Féin are now have effectively wiped out the SDLP and a nationalist representation in Westminster. That's what they have done.
And
they're now dominating community. They've ensured that the assembly itself hasn't sit. The most important thing now we have is Brexit negotiations due to start on the 19th of June. And what have we got here is we're back to tribal politics in the north of Ireland. You're back to DUP on one side, Sinn Féin on the other, and never the twain will meet.
Okay, Francie.
But the issue is here about the mandate that we received. It wasn't Sinn Féin wiped out the SDLP or took away. The people decided. And if we're talking about democracy here, surely we should be accepting that the mandate of the people decided who would represent them. They actually decided that Sinn Féin should represent them. And the Sinn Féin have a very strong voice. We will go back into those negotiations to try and bring about the executive and put it in place.
When do you hope that will be, Francie?
It has to be based on respect. It has to be based on implementation of the agreements already made.
The Irish
government are part of the guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement. They need to stand up on behalf of the Irish people, north and south, to make sure that the equality issues are represented.
Some of our other panellists would like to come in on this now. Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD, go ahead.
Yeah, I've listened to this over the last couple of days. I think that there's political points scoring going on. First of all, when Sinn Féin ran in the North, what was written on the tin was they weren't going to Westminster. People could have voted for the SDLP if they wanted. They didn't. So they gave Sinn Féin a mandate, and I'm no spokesperson for Sinn Féin, but they gave them a mandate by staying at what they always done, and that's not going to Westminster. And whether they went or not, and I don't think, as Dara was trying to avoid the question, I wouldn't swear an allegiance to the Queen. I never would. I'm an Irishman, and that's it, full stop. And whether they went or not to Europe or to Westminster, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference, because the DUP have the ball in their court along with the Tories, and that's what will decide the next government in England.
Diane McConnell, you wanted to come in here.
Yeah, I think this row over the oath allegiance, I mean, it has echoes of 1927 and Fianna Fáil when they first entered the Dáil. I mean, and they described it at that stage. They found a form of words, a fudge, and described it at that stage as an empty formula, which allowed them to take their seats and began to dismantle the treaty of 1922. Tony Benn, the Labour TD, a long-standing Republican and anti-monarch monarchist in the UK, always swore his oath of allegiance under protest. There's nothing to stop Sinn Féin doing that. I have to agree with Michael in some shape or form. Just let me finish the point and then I'll give way. I agree with Michael. Given the fact that the DUP are in there, I think there's a lot of nonsense being spoken about. I think it wouldn't really make too much difference. But I don't...
Whether Sinn Féin are there or not.
Whether Sinn Féin go in or not. Dara, but I think ultimately, I would think, you know, this kind of clinging on to this oath of allegiance as a reason not to go in, I think, is a hollow one.
Francis, do you want to respond to that? Well, that you could find a way around it that would be acceptable?
Well, first of all, it's not about finding a way around it. We have a mandate that we went to the people with. The people know what the situation is. I think it would be disrespectful to say to the people, we asked for a mandate last week, now we're going to change our mind, we're going in and we're going to hold our nose. The point about Tony Benn is Tony Benn is a British citizen and was a British citizen. So he had no problem at the end. He might have a problem with the oath of allegiance, but he was British. I am an Irishman, and I am not taking an oath of allegiance to a British Queen. And I would expect that someone who is actually advocating an Irish Parliament would not do the same either.
Martin Hayden, what's the Fine Gael view? What's your view?
Well, Claire, there's a simple fact here that in the last 3 years, the people of Northern Ireland have gone through 7 different elections. And what they have to show at the end of that is an assembly that's in abeyance, and almost half of their MPs now that aren't going to take a seat in Westminster or have any meaningful role in the discussions about Brexit, that is going to have the biggest impact on the 1.8 million people that live in Northern Ireland. Similarly, we had our general election here last year where the Sinn Féin came in and folded their arms, refused to negotiate in any way afterwards when there was a pretty
difficult consultation. They would say that you wouldn't negotiate with them.
But they never looked to talk to Fianna Fáil. The numbers would have met up. They didn't want to engage in any way. And in fairness to Fianna Fáil, they did acknowledge that, you know, some government needed to be formed. And then Leo Varadkar is appointed our leader last week. And first thing Gerry Adams says, let's have another election. So they love elections. They love being constantly electioneering, but they don't like have any interest in taking responsibility thereafter. And to me, they just cause mayhem wherever they go, but don't take on the responsibility or the leadership that is necessary that goes with the mandate that they're given.
What about Michael Fitzmaurice's point, and Daniel agreed with him, that in this case it would make no difference whether they're there or not?
Well, if the DUP have the balance of power with 10, then Sinn Féin with 7, you know, have a very significant impact.
And the majority would actually increase. The numbers for a majority, a workable majority, would actually increase. That's the reality. Do you think there's going to be total attendance of every MP every single time there's a vote? The reality of it is, if the Tory and DUP government, if that's what happens, win a vote by 7 seats or less, you could actually hang that on the Sinn Féin MPs who didn't take their seat. That's the fact. That's simple mathematics.
Miriam and Claire, yeah, just Sinn Féin's clearly not returning on this. And as Michael says, the ball is clearly in the DUP court. They're the queen makers now. And it's been fascinating to watch people in Britain tuning in to the DUP. And you can just imagine them saying to themselves, you know, the Democratic Unionist Party, that sounds eminently reasonable. And then they begin to Google them, check up on them and find out what they think about climate change, same-sex marriage and things like that. And I interviewed actually Ruth Davidson, the Scottish Tory leader, before the marriage equality referendum here. She's engaged to a woman from Wexford now, a lady called Jen Wilson. And so she is obviously rather concerned about their views as well. But, you know, the fact is we can't sit back and pass the popcorn and watch this election play out as we might normally in elections in other countries, because we're so intimately involved in this, because we share an island with these people. And, you know, I think a lot of people in the Republic have yet to tune in really to the DUP. I mean, I've spent many a long hour at election counts up north, and you know they do things like they chant doxologies after election counts, that sort of, you know, praise to God after election counts and so on. It's very, very different from what you'd see in the Republic, and it has to be remembered that the party sprang from the church of the Reverend Dr. Ian Paisley. So, you know, there are a whole politics is all about relationships, and you know, Leo Varadkar now, who we expect, if all goes smoothly for him, will be Taoiseach by next Wednesday. He has to tread very carefully. I think he has actually managed to establish, I believe, quite a positive relationship with Arlene Foster, which not every politician manages to do. However,
they
both
held the tourism briefs, isn't that right?
They would have interacted on the rugby World Cup bid and so on. But I think he has built that relationship on the back of his robust criticisms of Sinn Féin and what he has said about Sinn Féin over the years. That has probably, endeared him to Arlene Foster. Although recently he's been saying things like a united Ireland could happen in our lifetime, and that's not exactly music to unionist ears. But as I say, he ramped up his criticism of Sinn Féin during the leadership election when he was competing with Simon Coveney, calling the party the biggest threat to our democracy and our prosperity, and, you know, not just focusing on Sinn Féin in the Republic but also in the North, where he talked about the newish leader Michelle O'Neill there being, in his words, selected in a secret room behind closed doors. So, you know, Leo Varadkar's temperament couldn't be more different than that of Enda Kenny's.
Okay,
you know, I
think it's important, right, to say that appeasement politics like Leo Varadkar playing up to the Democratic Unionist Party and trying to knock down Sinn Féin, that will not move us forward. We have had a watershed election here. First time in 50 years that you no longer have a unionist majority at a Westminster election. That's a turning point. And what we need is a referendum for Irish unity. And that's what the Irish government need to actually be promoting.
They won 53,000...
We've had the opportunities in the past.
They won 53,000 more votes than Sinn Féin. One of our listeners, Kevin, says that the DUP is on the cusp of bringing huge financial benefits to Northern Ireland. Now, we don't know what they're going to look for in those negotiations, Francie,
Whenever there was a unionist vote that was required at Westminster, what they looked for was extra seats. They looked after themselves. They got those extra seats, and now what they're doing is using that again to leverage for themselves, not for it. But what we need to do...
So you don't think that they're going to get additional investment in health, education and infrastructure, going through their manifesto and looking at what they had promised? Surely they will be going after some of those types of wins.
Well, we welcome any further investment into the fact that we've had from the Conservative Party for the last number of years of austerity, which actually have been cutting the grants to the Assembly, and instead of actually supporting the Assembly whenever we got the institutions up and running, what the British government done was actually withdraw the funding and withdraw the possibility.
But this is the other side of it for you guys, isn't it? Because you've got to go and watch the DUP getting these wins for the electorate in Northern Ireland.
Well, Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster, along with previous DUP leaders, made the case several times to the British government to ensure that the proper funding was actually provided, that the Barnett formula was increased to. Because what we want here in the new executive is respect and equality.
Well, it's about more than that, if I could.
And equality for everyone's rights right across the board.
But we're not talking about the executive. We're talking about what the DUP can extract from Theresa May in order to guarantee their support.
For the Assembly to be effective, for the executive
it's not about the Assembly. It's not about the Assembly. It's about Westminster. It's about going over there and saying, we will vote with you if you give us stuff.
Claire, it's bigger than that.
We're not going to be in that bargaining situation, because Theresa May called this election to bolster Theresa May, and she has failed.
Okay, we'll take the biggest issue that we've got to deal with right now, if I could. I'm trying to make sense of what Francie's saying there, and I can't, right? The reality of it is, what we've got coming down the track in about a week's time is negotiations starting on Brexit, okay? What you have then is a weakened Tory party. We don't know how many of those would be strong, hard Brexiteers and how many of them would be softer along the line. Now, the DUP now are also at the table, who were a Leave party also, but whose members, such as Geoffrey Donaldson and others, have said over time that they don't want to see a hard border as well. So there are issues that we need to look at right now in relation to the British negotiations with Europe. I was in Belgium on Wednesday, and the European Union are ready, and they're ready to start those negotiations. The concern is now is that you've a weakened UK government. We don't know what they want. You have a DUP there
Do they want a harder border? Do they want to harden it? Do they want to consolidate their own position as power brokers within the North by basically having the ear of the British Prime Minister that everything that's done in the North effectively has to be channeled through the DUP? And these are the concerns that I and my party have, and and that's one of the reasons why my own party leader, Micheál Martin, had mentioned, I'd agree with Mary on this, that this is such a different situation that we have here, that we're so inextricably linked, okay, particularly over the next 2 years, what can happen with Brexit and other things, right, and political uncertainty.
But the negotiations around that will be in Europe. The negotiations around that with the Irish government needs to represent all of the people of Ireland and to ensure that actually happens. The other issue is that Theresa May, prior to the discussion prior to this election, ruled out the Assembly, even when the Assembly was up and running on the executive, the same way as with Scotland, ruled out any involvement in the negotiations. She would make the decisions well. And what we need to do is to ensure the Assembly is back up and running again, that respect and equality is the issues that are actually dealt with, and that the Assembly gets the proper funding.
I doubt
to
the Assembly, though, Francie, will be the DUP priority in the next week.
It's not a Sinn Féin priority either, let's be honest.
Like, the irony here, Claire, is that the DUP, while being Brexiteers, have called for a minimal approach to pulling out of the Union. They've included in their manifesto a call for a frictionless border and maintenance of the common travel area and a free trade deal with the EU. They're actually, it sounds like, going to be pushing for the types of concessions for people of Northern Ireland that we will want, and that Sinn Féin, you would imagine, would be fighting for, but and instead it's going to be the DUP that are looking for that. And you
but
know,
in relation to attendance, the Labour Party is also pro-Brexit, and the people of the North voted to remain within Europe, and the opportunity to do that is that the special status, and we hope the support right across Ireland, for special status for the people of the North to remain within Europe as we move into a situation of transition to where the Irish people as a body can actually stay in Europe.
I'm going to finish up on this soon, but just before we do, Daniel, your piece today, you say that an Irish government minister told you that what is happening now with the DUP going in potentially to prop up Theresa May is a disaster. Why?
Yeah. I think the conversations I was having with members of Cabinet yesterday and other members of government yesterday were echoing the sort of noise we were getting from the likes of Jonathan Powell, former advisor to Tony Blair. Since 1991, the British government's position in Northern Ireland is to be neutral and not to take the side of either the Unionists or the Nationalists. What we now have is a position that the DUP are essentially on the side, or the Tories are on the side of the DUP. That obviously has a distorting impact on what happens in the North, obviously will have a distorting impact on what happens in relation to Brexit and everything else. So how can they be neutral? How do you get your institutions back up and running? And I think the fears amongst the Irish cabinet ministers who I spoke to yesterday was this skews the pitch. Like, it's already a mess up there anyway. It's already difficult in terms of getting the institutions back up and running. This just complicates it even further. And, you know, at a time where you really need strong voices representing Ireland, both North and South, this makes it virtually impossible. And that's why they said it was a disaster.
So just, Francie, to finish, is that a big problem that you can foresee coming down the tracks in terms of getting the Northern Assembly up and running, that if you have the DUP backed by the Tory government, that it'll be very hard for you to do business when you at least perceive that there is some askewance there with support from Westminster?
Yes, I think it is a problem, and the concerns that people have expressed is that the Tory government were never neutral in relation to the North, and now they've been reinforced by the DUP, and the DUP will actually be trying to get concessions out of there. What we want to ensure is that the issue around equality and respect for the institutions and for the implementation of the agreements that are already made, this is not something new. This is the implementation of the agreements that already have been made, and that's what we will be lobbying. On Monday morning, our team of negotiators will be meeting with Gerry Flanagan, and that will kick off a round of meetings with political parties to try and move forward the whole issue of the Assembly and the Executive up and running.
Okay.
And if the election hadn't have interfered with that, it's quite possible that the Executive would have been already up and running before now.
All right, we'll leave it there. Francie Molloy, thank you for joining us on the line. More after this quick break. Thanks for all of the text messages and tweets on that last discussion. Keep them coming in. 51551 is the text number, and on Twitter it's at SaturdayRTE. A reminder of our panel: Daniel McConnell, political editor with the Irish Examiner; Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil TD; Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD; Martin Hayden, Fine Gael Party Chairman and TD, of course; and Mary Minahan, who's political reporter with the Irish Times. Michael, you're not going to vote for Leo. You're going to vote against Leo. You abstained when it was Enda Kenny, but you're voting against Leo. What did he do to you?
No, Leo did nothing. I've made it very clear that, first of all, it's nothing against him. It would be the same if it was Simon Coveney. And I wish him luck, by the way. But the last time I was at talks, and look how they went up to the very last few minutes, but a programme for government was put together. And that programme for government, a lot of people, in fairness, Fianna Fáil were involved at the time, and independents were involved. And we drove up and down the road many a day to try and put a document together. And unfortunately, there are lots of parts of that programme for government that would be important, and parts that I would have been very involved in myself, like agriculture and rural, you know, things in rural Ireland. And they haven't been delivered on. Look, it has basically been...
So it's a protest vote, really.
Look, there's no point in voting. There's no point in spending 80 days up and down a road to have a piece of paper that you look at above in a frame and nothing happening on it. And that's the reason. That's the only reason. It's absolutely nothing against Leo Varadkar. As I say, I wish him the best of luck. But that's my stand, and I'm taking it.
Michael, come on, we not be honest, like, because we've spoken about this before, and others have spoken about this before. You know, Simon Coveney was one who was very involved with the talks, but Leo Varadkar all the way through was a very disinterested figure. He was more interested in looking at his phone than he was at looking in the eyes of the independents. Is that not more to do with your reason for not voting for him than the failure to put the stuff through? Like?
If you want to deal with, you're dealing with two different issues there, and you're asking me two different questions, and I'll deal with both questions very frank and clear. In fairness to Simon Coveney, he put in hours and hours, and there was many a row during it, and in fairness to him, he never threw the baby out of the bedwater. Yeah, there was less interest from Leo, but that's absolutely nothing got to do today with... But when you agree a programme for government or when it's there, it's about delivering. Mm. And yes, some things have been delivered, and I'm not going to go saying or slating that nothing has been delivered. But the important things, and especially, you know, I see things in agriculture because that's the type of rural area I come from, that's ferociously important to keeping families in rural areas that hasn't seen the boom. Thankfully, that Dublin has seen and Galway City has seen, and that's good. And job numbers, more people working, is good things. I'm not being critical of everything.
And you did say that if Simon had won the contest, that you would take the same stance.
Yeah, very clearly. So, you know, I've dealt with two things.
I don't think Daniel McCann's buying it, but anyway.
I've answered it straight out. I don't deny what you said. That definitely Simon Coveney put in hours and hours.
No, but it goes to I suppose my point of raising it is it goes to the heart of Leo's attitude to being in government and being the leader in government. I mean, he's also been very critical of Fianna Fáil. He said very clearly, I don't trust Fianna Fáil, I don't like Fianna Fáil. And, you know, we're dealing with it, we're still in a confidence and supply arena makeup.
He's kind of softened that though now,
yeah,
hasn't
Leo Varadkar will have to change. You know, he can't be this maverick character that he sometimes, he played that role sometimes as a minister. You know, he's not going to be able to have that kind of relationship with Micheál Martin now. And as you say, Claire,
but
I think that has already changed.
But can he deny who he truly is though, Mary?
Talked about having
Daniel
fresh
said,
start
you know,
there,
during the talks, a story came out on the Sunday and journalists will give you a fair tip off to where things come from. But anyhow, there's these crazy independents were looking for 13 billion for the west of Ireland, which was totally untrue. And it was being provoked from a certain sector or group. And that wasn't helpful because everyone was in there trying to do their best. And, you know, if you keep stoking the fire, you'll soon get burned.
And who do you think might have said that now to the papers?
Well, I don't know. I wonder. I've a fair idea, but I'm not going to be live.
And come on.
Sure, we'll ask Philip Ryan. I think it was his story in the Sunday.
There is going to be a new focus, though, isn't there, on the west of Ireland in this cabinet, Martin? Well, isn't that what we're hearing?
Michael Martin hopes it won't.
In
fairness, Leo talked during the week. And first and foremost, his priority and his focus is on ability and capability, but he also talked about factors such as geography and gender and they
and
all
trust.
Trust.
Don't forget that's
the most interesting
bit.
Worried if you were Simon Harris.
That's not good news for Simon Harris, is it?
Look, I wouldn't read too much into that. He made the analogy about a sporting team and that everybody with the same focus, and everyone in Fine Gael is very focused. And you know, you talk about what people's perception of how these things might work out. I remember when the leadership contest started a couple of weeks ago, another Sunday paper having a big picture of Simon and Leo, saying the headline was "Blood will be spilt," and we've managed to have a very competitive yet good campaign where you know that didn't happen. And I believe you know we'll have a very cohesive.
Ah,
but it, look, it was a big prize. It was a big prize, and you'd be surprised if there wasn't a bit of edge to it. But you know, I think we'll have a very cohesive and strong government going forward after this week.
What do you say to Michael Fitzmaurice? Feels let down.
Look, you know, Michael had his opportunity, and I appreciate the fact that he engaged in those talks a year ago, but he had an opportunity to be a part of this government and to have the influence from within. And I know from my 6 years in the Dáil, I would hope that any further days I have in the Dáil are spent on, more of them are spent on the government side than the opposition side, because you just don't have the same impact in opposition. And however difficult it might be to be part of the decision-making process at times, it's where you get to affect change, it's where you get to implement policies that you believe will make a difference to your region and to the area that you see that needed most. And I can assure Michael there's plenty of people from rural Ireland that is members of Fine Gael in the Dáil who have the same focus and same desires that he has.
You made your bed, you may lie in it.
Well, I stand by the beliefs I have and what I said to people, that's the bottom line, and I will always do that for better or for worse. And I don't believe in being the driver of the car and being in the passenger seat as a minister and you're doing nothing. There's no point in that. You have to, if you're in there, you have to make sure there's change. And even for the independent ministers at the moment, you know, there is no indelible mark being laid by anybody at the moment to drive the agenda that's needed. And I look at that programme for government because I nearly know it off by heart. And in fairness, you know, there was courtesy shown towards us. I'm not criticising anything like that. But when you know it nearly inside out and you're watching it day in, day out for delivery, there is no good having this script and saying, oh, well, sure. And maybe it was a mistake of mine, and I'm man enough to say it, that I didn't nail some things down and put dates on it. Even though there was things like the cap reform was to be changed in the middle of 2017. There isn't one thing happening on it.
What about this notion, though, that there might be a minister for the West, that there would be a split or an offshoot from the Department of the Gaeltacht, I think, isn't that right? Where you'd have a minister specifically looking after the West of Ireland. Surely you'd welcome that.
Well, like, you welcome whatever minister comes to an area. That's the bottom line in that. But there's no good in having the title of a minister and drive around in a car if you're not delivered, and that's the simple facts about it.
Okay. Independent ministers, is that a fair criticism that they're not delivering, they haven't made their mark?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily think so. I think they've made some of a mark. I think they've extracted several pounds of flesh from Fine Gael on, you know, issues of conscience and so on. I think the Judicial Appointments Bill, I think, is definitely a win for the Independent Alliance. But, I mean, I think everyone, Fine Gael and the Independents alike, have found it tough going to try and get legislation through. I clearly think the dynamic of the Dáil isn't conducive to getting an awful lot of legislation through and getting work done. I think we've spoken about this on this programme before.
And that's not going to change.
No, it's not.
New regime.
Well, I mean, Leo has promised that there'll certainly be improvements. I just don't see how. I mean, like, trying to, like, under the, with the makeup of the business committee, unless you take an awful lot of the time that's dedicated to the opposition and give it back to the government, I think you're still going to continue to see the slow churn of legislation through the Dáil.
I honestly think the first test of Leo will be in the coming month in the line of the Garda Commission. Who's going to go in as Minister for Justice, and what's going to happen? Is he going to cut to the chase? Because he's seen, in fairness to him, he, you know, he's a pretty blunt talker, and you know, anyone should appreciate that. And to see what will go on with the Garda Commissioner, because this saga cannot keep. I know that I was watching the committee there, that Alan Kelly brought up stuff about Timblemore, other TDs brought up stuff about Timblemore, and this has gone on and gone on. It's like being drip fed week in, week out. And I think the first thing he has to do is cut to the chase there. Forget about what it's going to cost him money. Make sure that we get people back on the side and hope again.
Who's going in the Department of Justice? I mean, we all expect a change, right?
The key question, I suppose, I think there's actually two really key appointments for Leo Varadkar. First one being Justice, I agree with you. And he's made noises now about accountability. Let's just see what happens now in practice. But the other one is Foreign Affairs, because we have Brexit coming down the tracks. That is an absolute key one. Who goes there? Who is the person who goes up to the North and negotiates there, goes over to Westminster, goes to Europe and so on?
Is there not another option, though, to have a Brexit minister, even in a junior or super junior position?
There is. But what we're also hearing is that they're likely to beef up Brexit components of existing department. Like, the Department of Jobs is likely to get a kind of a special Brexit type kind of focus to it. I think Mary is absolutely right. I think the Justice appointment would be very key. And, you know, names being bandied around, is one is Richard Bruton, who has, I think, widespread respect across the party. And I think he would bring a new focus to it. I think it's the kind of dedication and focus he brought to the Department of Jobs, I think, would be well suited to Justice. Foreign Affairs.
So his name being linked to finance anymore, or is that over? Is that
battle won? I think what one of the options that is certainly being looked at is, and Leo Varadkar kind of even hinted at this at a doorstep the other day, was that there may be a rejoining back of the two departments. What is probably more likely in the short run is that Pascal Dunhuugh could be appointed as minister over the two finance departments, given the fact that the public sector pay talks are now done by and large, and he can then focus on the budget.
It may not be done yet.
The draft document is done. The other, the big in terms of foreign affairs, one of the names that we're hearing rather interestingly is that Simon Coveney may go to foreign affairs with the title of Taoiseach, and that would be a kind of an interesting move, notwithstanding his own statement that he has unfinished business in housing. So, I mean, there are a number of different issues.
That goes back to something that you've been talking about there, and we've had it, and understandably to a degree over the last number of weeks, like a fixation on the personalities, and it's been Leo and it's been Simon, and every media organisation's bought into that as well. There's still major, major issues there, and I'd agree with Michael on a couple of things that he said. This government, and if it's headed by Leo Varadkar, which it will be, Fianna Fáil, my own party, we took a responsible, a very quick decision to say that our agreement and our arrangement was not with Enda Kenny, as you know, it was confidence supply, three budgets for stability. But what we really want to see as a party as well is more urgency, more vision and actually more ambition from this government. Because if you look at the areas, if you look at housing, we're failing there at the moment. We're failing in health. So my party's job is to continue to hold the government to account, but also to implement our own policies from the opposition perspective. And I hope very soon after next Wednesday, and I do wish Leo well, I served on Fingal County Council with him going way back to 2004. But as once that's done, let's just get on with it, because the last four, and some would argue the last year in many departments, and I think Leo's own department as well, has been more fixated on his accession to leader of Fine Gael and Taoiseach than the work that he has to actually do. And I think when you look at
but they're not going to be that worried support. About the Fianna Fáil pressure, are they? Because you've shown that you're not willing to pull out. You had the opportunity in February and you didn't do it.
Yeah, to a lot of people's disappointment, what we took was a principled and realistic and responsible position. But we won't be taken for granted either, I can tell you that, because that's not something that we will be. What we're interested in is delivering our own policies. And we've already put a stamp on the direction.
But it's quite clear that you're not ready for an election just yet.
No, so we're ready. Look, Claire, if an election happened, we'd be ready. People thought we weren't ready.
You're not going to cause it to happen.
People thought we weren't ready for the last election. And we proved a lot of people wrong in that regard. We are ready for an election if an election happened. That is not what the country needs or wants right now. What we need is a degree stability. But what we also need is to see this government deliver. I think all of us in the Oireachtas, because one thing it is, I disagree with Martin on this, where Martin talks about, you've got to be in government to effect change. The makeup of the Oireachtas now, if it worked, and particularly the Dáil, could mean that opposition bills will pass. And we've got to work on ensuring that happens much more often. Okay. And that the government aren't just allowed to block them and let them die in a vine.
So there are things
that can be done.
What you think should happen within Cabinet? I mean, do you agree that justice is the first thing that needs to change?
No, to be fair, and it's up to whoever, the new Taoiseach, who will be Leo Varadkar, will be the one who will appoint as Cabinet Ministers. And that's always been the way under successive governments. So it wouldn't be right or proper of me to comment as to who I think an incoming Taoiseach should appoint to various different departments. What I would say, though, is I think we've been very clear as a party in Fianna Fáil of our view of the Justice Minister's tenure over the Department of Justice and what has happened, particularly with the Gardaí. No, it's up to the Taoiseach to decide. I think that he will have an opportunity to put.
Would you like to see Mary Mitchell O'Connor stay in the Department of Jobs?
I think she's done a terrible job. But that's me saying that as a TD, as an opposition spokesperson, and also as a citizen. And that's nothing personal. I think there's a number of ministers there that you would question their performance. Absolutely.
Who else?
Tara, would you not agree on one thing, though, that in some ministerial positions, and it's very easy for us, and I'm in opposition and I could give out about like Coveney all day and housing. You're not going to build houses overnight. In fairness, Coveney has tried a lot of different things. Some are working and some aren't working. Mm. But you need a bit of continuity as well. I'm just asking the question, would you agree with me, that in some critical areas, like where there are problems, be it in housing or other areas, we need certain amount
of... We know exactly, all of us around the table, and I'd agree with Michael on this, where the real focus needs to be
on housing, on homelessness, mortgage arrears and health. They're the things. And then a big focus in relation to foreign policy, our relationship with Europe and our relationship with Britain. They're the absolute priorities. And it's our job, right, to ensure that government is focused in that direction. But whoever he picks, sure. That's up
You're
to
being
him.
Very quiet over there. What job do you want yourself?
I'm not sure what Dara's metric is for success, but you know, I'm going to have to defend my colleagues here to say that the Minister for Enterprise and Jobs is doing a terrible job at a time where we've seen 225,000 people in work now that weren't 5 and 6 years ago.
What's she not carrying on the work?
What's
she
action plan? What's she to? What about the action
government
plan?
Doesn't create jobs. Government doesn't create
government
jobs.
Creates, you know, and I
government let's creates, just let him make the point. Then
government
you can
creates
all shout
the environment where jobs. And ever since Action Plan for Jobs came in 2012, when unemployment was at 15.1%, it's now down to 6.2%. And you know,
so Mary Mitchell is responsible for that.
I would say it's very disingenuous of people here who are supporting the government on one hand to then go and pick off individual ministers and make whatever personal attacks.
I was asked.
You can say it's not personal.
No, Martin, I was asked specifically about a specific minister. Claire asked me, I gave a direct answer. That's my view, okay? And I hold that view. I hold that view by having put numerous parliamentary questions down to her in relation to what the Department of Jobs is doing with regard to Brexit, with regard to beefing up our own teams, securing jobs from the outside in here and making sure, like Mary Mitchell was the one who confirmed to me that we haven't even looked for a relaxation of state aid rules at a European Union level to support the agri-food sector and other sectors that are absolutely exposed and are losing jobs right now.
Is that not Michael Creed's job?
No, he's agriculture. Her job would be in jobs in relation to state aid rules. That would be the element, that part of her job as well. Michael Creed, obviously, as Ag Minister, would be there. But when you're talking about bringing things to the Commission and actually seeing...
But this is the whole problem with not having a Brexit minister. Because these things fall between two stools.
Well, it's actually not. I think Dara's making the very good case, even though his Brexit spokesperson would say there is a need for a minister, he's actually making the case why there shouldn't be one. Because it's such an important issue. It has to be centrally managed by the Department of the Taoiseach. It's the right thing to do. And every minister and every state department has a responsibility to make sure that they're looking after their elements.
There's got to be a Brexit minister.
Absolutely not. There's one other Brexit spokesperson in the country, in the world, over in Britain. Your Brexit minister will go and meet him. Who else would they talk to? The heads of state will ultimately decide all of these things.
Martin, that's at the Council of Ministers.
Martin, what ministerial role would you like yourself?
Well, you know...
like a gig? That's what I'm asking. Would you like to do it?
The one thing that Leo is going to learn during the week is when you appoint, you disappoint. And if he gives people jobs, he'll ultimately probably have to take some away from other people, and that makes it very difficult. And I think
would you like one? Of course you would.
Like, there'd be something wrong with a politician in Dáil Éireann who wouldn't have the ambition to go further. I was a councillor in Kildare County Council, and I saw that by running for the Dáil, you would have more power and more ability to affect change. And when you're a TD, you see if you're a minister, you would also be able to make that impact and take it to the next level.
Have you had a call yet?
But I'm chairman of the party, so obviously I deal with Leo on a range of different issues. But the fact of the matter is that this is the conversation here, and I can completely understand it over the media for this weekend will be about the personalities involved, but the policies of what our government is going to pursue. I'm following on from the start that we've had in this minority government.
Ministers, I'm desperately trying to read his face here. It's very difficult.
I think, you know, you can dismiss this as political gossip, and there is an element to that. But, you know, it is important. The personalities who lead departments are important. And we all know, we've all discussed what are the big issues for the country at the moment. But, you know, really, when Leo Varadkar makes his choices, he'll make political calculations. He has said he will reward loyalty. That's what he means when he talks about trust and the importance of trust. Geography, huge factor in any cabinet selection process in Ireland, and to a lesser extent, gender. That remains to be seen. I don't know how important a gender mix is to Leo Varadkar. I just don't know. We'll find out soon. I would venture to say he won't be following in the footsteps of, you know, often name-checked by him and his supporters are people like Macron and Trudeau.
Isn't it the day
when you're looking at, you know, where you'll gain politically better or geographically better, that if you were playing in All-Ireland or your county was playing in All-Ireland, who gives a damn whether you come from the arsehole of nowhere or a city to get on the team to win the All-Ireland? And what a Taoiseach should do is pick the best team, regardless if they were from Fianna Fáil. If they were in opposition, you should try and make
Michael,
sure.
Don't pretend you're not a politician.
No, but you should make sure you pick your best team, because this isn't about you know, winning the next election. Unfortunately, some politicians do think that way. It's about our country. It's about our country facing into a big sort of tsunami.
And that's why Leo. And that's why Leo said during the week, first and foremost, it'll be about ability and then capability for specific
roles.
He'll
come back to this in a minute. We have to take a really, really quick break. We'll come back to this in a minute. Daniel, does Martin Hayden here have a chance of getting a job in Cabinet?
Cabinet may be a stretch. I certainly think there's a good junior ministry with his name on it, I would think. I think he's been a very effective chairman of the parliamentary party. I'm not just saying that because he's sitting here beside us. I think he's seen as an honest broker. And I think also as well, you know, he mightn't say it himself, but I think he was always slightly closer to the Leo wing than he may have been to the Coveney wing. So that may see him in good stead in come Wednesday.
Is this uncomfortable at all, Martin?
You're talking about geography, though. And if you're going for a minister for the West, Kildare hasn't had one in a while, and it'd be great. But when you talk about the fact that it's about ability, the point I was making earlier is that Leo's difficulty is there are a lot of very able people within the party, and not all of them are going to be able to get a job.
So who are going to get jobs, Mary? Owen Murphy is a dead cert, is he?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people around Leinster House feeling very vulnerable, and there are lots of people feeling hopeful. And the names that are being mentioned are Owen Murphy, Sean Kane, Regina Doherty, Helen McEntee, John Paul Phelan, and Martin Hayden there. I'm not just mentioning him, as I say, because he's sitting nearby, but certainly I'm sure Martin would think that you know, counties like Meath have been very well rewarded in terms of ministries in recent times, and I'm sure he would like to see some counties and not too far away from there rewarded also.
There's a lot of names there on
John
your
DC.
List, so.
Yeah, I know. There are so many names. There are so many hungry mouths to feed, and so many, not that many slots really. Certainly,
Michael,
at senior level.
It could have been you. It could have been you. Look what you could have had.
He looks gorgeous.
Absolutely.
But I think what you'll also see, I think Mary mentioned the name John Deasy. I think that could be a big surprise. I think John Deasy, who's been in the political wilderness for a long time because of his political animosity with Enda Kenny and the personal animosity between himself and Enda Kenny, I think he may come in from
he's
the cold.
Very capable guy.
Yeah, and I think he's well respected around Leinster House as a kind of a straight shooter. And I think the work he did on the Grace thing alone has shown that, you know, he can put his money where his mouth is.
Absolutely.
I think also you'll likely see someone like Brendan Griffin in Kerry. I mean, I think one of the big oversights of Enda Kenny's reshuffle last time, that there wasn't a minister for Kerry, and I think you'll probably see a minister for Kerry this time around, and Brendan Griffin might be that man.
So who's gone then?
Well, I think you'll start looking at, I think people like Marcella Corkin Kennedy could be vulnerable. David Staunton, the junior justice, could be in trouble. I think a lot of the people who supported Simon Coveney at junior ministerial level could face the axe. I think there have also been, I think there's a widespread feeling amongst maybe media types in some parts of the party that, you know, a lot of people at junior level were given jobs based on loyalty to Enda Kenny rather than ability. And I think Leo Varadkar, if he is to put his stamp on the party, would look to promote those who he would see as more able than those who are there at the moment.
What do you think about Simon Harris and his future in Cabinet?
Yeah, I think he didn't have a good campaign. I think, you know, the fact that he was the only Cabinet Minister to support Simon Coveney did leave him vulnerable. I think the perception that on the Saturday of Simon Coveney's wobble, that there was a perception that Simon Harris rang into HQ seeing whether or not he could put his name into the race, now that has subsequently been denied, but at least there was a perception that he may have been up to games. That didn't play well, and certainly hasn't played well among some of his party members. There's also known that himself and Leo don't really get on. There isn't a great deal of warmth and, mm-hmm. you know, good feeling between the two. But
in case Simon Harris is listening, what you just said is a rumour, and we can't prove it.
We're talking about, this is the gossip and our stock and trade of kind of rumours and chats, and, you know, there aren't smoke-filled rooms anymore, but you know what I mean. I think the one thing that's going in his favour is a need for consistency in the Department of Health. And I think, you know, I think Leo wouldn't be, I don't think it would be well taken if there was another Fine Gael Minister for Health in such a short period of time.
Seeing as he did such a great job in health himself.
In health, Leo was in it. It wasn't sorted.
Mike,
health is chaotic
time.
At the moment.
Okay, we've got to leave it there. We didn't get to the pay talks at all, which is my fault for mismanaging my time. But anyway, we got involved in a great discussion there, so no regrets. We'll get to the pay talks maybe next week. Thank you all very much indeed for coming in, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you for listening.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was Louise Kerr-Ross. The researcher was Simon Gallagher, and sound supervision was by Richard McCullough.